Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Listen up, punks. It's the Football Ramble. Good to have you with us. My name's Marcus and I've got Jim with me.
Hello.
You, Pete.
Oh, I can't figure one.
And Luke.
All right.
How you doing, chaps? Everybody good. Now, what have we got to begin with? Oh, there's a question.
It's been a quiet week, isn't it?
It's been a very... Yeah. I don't know where I've plucked this question from. Which footballer would you like to give a handshake to if you could pick anyone from the fabulous world of football, Jim?
I would go with Roy Keane to prepare me for my own death. So I think that's going to be as intimidating and frightening as it's ever going to get. So when the end eventually comes, you think, yeah, this isn't that bad, actually.
Yeah.
It's not the worst thing I've done.
So what would happen when you shook his hand?
What, for any
death? I imagine it would be like, you know that bit in Lord of the Rings where he puts the ring on and it's all goes black and it's all different and like suddenly just he's really vulnerable and exposed. I imagine it'd be like that. It'd be like, if you touched Roy Keane, you and he would just be in like this realm for a bit.
And
like it was just you two and he could just do what he wanted and it'd be awful.
Yeah.
So I imagine it'd be like that.
I reckon you sort of fling out sort of Wolverine claw straight through your arm and it's like, you're mine now.
And then get up. Get up.
Get up.
I think he would go for brute strength rather than...
He'd crush you. He'd be one of those people... Yeah. You know, like, it's the importance of a firm handshake.
Mm. Oh, he'd be terrible for that.
If you go too hard, you look like a bit of a dick.
Yeah.
Keane would definitely do that.
He would go, beyond that.
Yeah, well beyond that.
Massive, it would be strong start.
It's a man that can punch you with a stare, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very true. Pete?
I would go for Faustino Asprilla because I'd just try and... wiggle his arm to see if his arms were as rubbery as his legs and try and wiggle it as fast as possible until I've just got a big rubber band on the end of my hand.
Also works.
Sort of shake him out a bit.
Yeah, good.
Paolo one shot.
Paolo one shot.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Oh, I like it.
Paolo one shot.
Luke,
you did say from the world of football, so I'm just going to extend this slightly
to the world of rugby,
and I'm going to go for former Portsmouth chief executive Peter Story.
Right.
I'm going to lead him.
Why
with
on
the
earth?
Left. I'm going to lead him with the left. And I'm going to drill him right in his jowly face 110 million times, one for every pound and put my club in debt.
Wow.
Yeah. I'd like to make light of it, but at the end of it his face would just be a pulp.
Yeah. Well, it's an interpretation of the question.
Which is what you asked for.
Which chief executive would you punch in the face?
Yeah. Would you turn into a pink mist?
Yeah, that would be next week's question. I'd go for Tony Pulis because I don't know why, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was a Freemason. Yeah. And I wouldn't mind to see, you know, I'd just look at the handshake and see what he'd do and think, oh, okay.
But surely you'd have to know the handshake for him to give himself away.
No, but I'd really watch the handshake and just see if it was anything particularly different.
If he went for a particular knuckle or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Things in football that you don't always think about or don't very often think about.
Yeah.
Tony Pulis is Welsh.
Yeah, he is.
I didn't know that.
You don't think
about it. Didn't even know that.
Oh, he didn't know that. Okay, yeah, he's from Powys. Yeah, he's Welsh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he may or may not be in any kind of secret society. Who's going to get the points? Pete is.
Oh, after last week.
Yes. Yeah,
crawling
he's like
back.
He's like Howard Webb. He's even
he's compensating.
Leveling the playing field.
No, Tino Asprilla. But back on the show. Now then, let's move on to the Premier League. The handshake that never was in Manchester United versus Liverpool.
Is this not that Villa mascot?
Yeah. I do. It's not that. We'll move on to that one soon.
The tabloid press actually made a big deal out of that.
Yeah.
That's how much of a joke they are.
Incredible.
It's ridiculous. United won 2-1, but it was what happened before the game. Just before the game, Suarez not shaking Evra's hand. Suarez, of course, is the victim in this whole situation, Jim.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Isn't he just? I mean, for me, I even saw some people online that were posting things up trying to prove that Evra put, almost did like a sort of fake out on him. So he put his hand out slightly first, then moved it away to make Suarez look like the villain, which Suarez himself has sort of contradicted by apologising.
He did that with the actual racist yeah. act himself. He sort of completely blindsided the club by going, oh yeah, I did it.
Yeah. So I mean, obviously that is a crazy, crazy conspiracy theory from some people there, that Suarez himself, as I say, is sort of undermined. But it's just like, for me, it's ceased to be about Suarez and Evra. For me, the most depressing thing is the things Stan Collymore was retweeting on Twitter. A lot of stuff's been on social networking, just abject racism.
But that makes it legitimate what Suarez is. And
well, yeah, this is why obviously it's such a problem. You know, I mean, those fans are letting Liverpool down as much as anyone is by tweeting that sort of nonsense. It's making the club look so bad.
But not necessarily. Again,
some of them are, some of them aren't. Okay. You know,
they're just children, and most of them. Yeah. And they don't know that, you know, that is effectively a hate crime. They don't know that they can get in trouble for it. And they don't know that, you know, you can't get away with that sort of shit.
They're not always kids, though, man. I think as well.
They're mentally kids.
But in times of sort of economic hardship, traditionally right wing views become more popular. And I think football has been the sort of catalyst for something that's happened like that. And social networking's been the medium, appropriately enough. It's just depressing. The whole thing is so tedious. I just wish Suarez had shaken his hand so that this would just go away. Yeah. It's done is just made it 10 times worse.
The problem is, I just want Liverpool to just write this season off, because I think Kenny kind of seems like he's a man not of his time.
I think he's coming out of that
something. It comes down to something when, you know, Standard Chartered, the sponsors, are the moral compass in this situation. Because, you know, Kenny would have kept on going, the club would have kept on going down that tack, and Standard Chartered came in and sort of went, right, that's not happening. You need to book up your ideas. Yeah. And even, when they're
even,
coming in.
Even we think it's bad.
Yeah. I sort of want to pick up on what Jim said. Yeah. As far as I felt just really disappointed by it. I mean, I didn't see the game live. I recorded it and watched it when I got home. So I knew a little bit about the furore and stuff. But for me, it's just... And I agree with everything Alex Ferguson said on one level about how this history Liverpool have got as a club and that sort of stuff. And to be fair to Ferguson, he did come out and say whatever he did, he shouldn't have done. You know, he was disappointed with Evra's action as well. But for me, it was really disappointing to see a player and a manager of Dalglish's stature. I mean, arguably one of the greatest footballers Britain's ever produced.
Yeah,
coming out with this sort of, you know, this half-baked, sort of like almost defiant for no reason. I mean, Daniel Taylor in The Guardian summed up very well by saying, Liverpool and Kenny Dalglish are outraged by everything and ashamed of nothing. Mm. And the fact that they came out and apologised is welcome, obviously. I'd be interested to know what position that puts Liverpool fans in who backed Suarez. Lots of Liverpool fans backed Suarez for not shaking Evra's hand, saying you shouldn't have done it anyway. Well, but now he's apologised. What position are they in?
Well, but you know, Suarez is and Dalglish are maintaining that the... they're just basically rejecting the findings of the hearing, aren't they? They're maintaining that Suarez is innocent. So that's
but there are appropriate channels to go down.
Absolutely. And Dalglish as well was put in a difficult position by Suarez, because I think he genuinely didn't know he'd shaken his hand before the game. So he said, I was told he was going
to
do that. Yeah,
to tell you.
Yeah, it's
tough one for Dalglish. What's happening?
I mean, as well, what I find really frustrating about this, from Liverpool's perspective as well, is that all this is doing is sort of kind of detracting from the serious issues such as like Ryanair's recruitment policy.
Absolutely. That's the victim. You're right.
Absolutely.
Indeed. Well, I mean, Liverpool, at least they have come out and they have said this.
Hopefully we can put it behind us now.
Exactly. But let's get on to the game. And one has to say, you know, Evra nearly got sent off after a few minutes because he went for Suarez.
Him and Ferdinand was amazing. They took each other out. It was amazing.
But I tell you, Ferguson would have gone mental at him at half time. What the hell are you playing at,
that
man?
Was back to the days of Vinnie Jones. Yeah. Stick one on him as early as you can. Yeah. They were beside themselves to stick one on him, weren't they?
Yeah.
And they end up taking it. And Ferdinand looked like he hurt his back, which is a problem because he's had issues with his back before.
Yeah. But that was ridiculous play from Evra. Yeah. And I tell you, because if he'd have made contact, he'd probably got sent off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And can you make it down to 10 at home? You're in the title race.
As well.
Ferguson would have gone ape at him at half time. But he didn't. He took out Rio Ferdinand for Manchester United's sake. And they won 2-1. Rooney with a couple of goals.
Yeah. I mean, it's taken away from the game itself completely. It wasn't a great game.
No.
Rooney was magnificent, I thought.
He was,
He doesn't score many against Liverpool, so he'll be delighted for that to get a couple there. Mm. But Suarez getting the goals, it was almost Shakespearean, wasn't it?
There was
so much drama in it. Without the game actually being that good.
The fact that he scored quite late on meant that he didn't do a celebration. Mm. He got his ball and went back to the halfway line.
Yeah.
You can only imagine what he
was. Do you think he did that out of respect for the United?
Listen, if that was a last minute winner.
Oh my goodness.
He'd have had a jetpack behind the hoarding.
He'd have blacked up and pretended to cry. It would have.
Well, we can only speculate over that. So that was one of the big stories of recent times in England. The other one, of course, is Fabio Capello resigning as England manager. Pete.
I just liked the way that that interview was conducted through what looked like a kind of Beauty and the Beast style mirror. Is it Beauty and the Beast? No. Sleeping Beauty? No.
Yeah,
which is one where it's like they've got that mirror on the wall kind of thing. It seemed to be he was looking through a window and sort of going, well, I think about this, about the Terry thing, blah, 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 blah. No. It was a strange television set.
You talk about the Italian interview.
Yeah.
He was mistranslated in that and he also cut it off. A couple of people told me that in Italy, because they rush to get the news out so quickly, they take little sound bites. And send them out to all the news agencies, and that's what happened with Capello. And they cut off. He mentioned how disappointed he was that the decision was taken, but they cut off at the end. He said, "But that's the board decision. That's the FA's decision," and that's why it snowballed so badly. Yeah. You know.
But do you not think though this was? It seemed like it was just both parties agreed. Yeah. I've had enough. You've had enough.
Yeah.
This is not the reason why he's been sacked, surely.
No.
Oh, not sacked, sorry, he's resigned. I mean, it just seemed they've fallen out of love.
It's a big juncture, isn't it?
They're even giving the impression that whoever takes over, be it Redknapp or whoever, that, you know, they're saying, the FA is saying, we'll have more of an active role in the team and in this, that and the other.
Is
and
that
implying,
a good thing?
And I don't think it is. They're implying that the next manager won't have as much control, and they're sort of stating that from the offset. But I just think the FA, you know, we've seen the way they've sort of acted so many times in the past. You know, we know we need grassroots improvement and development in England. I know they're doing certain things, but, you know, it's been coming for such a long time. You wonder, are they so used to just sort of being kind of executives at a big company that that's how the FA see things? Are they actually actively trying to get the next generation of England players to win things? Are they more concerned with their own jobs and their own careers?
Well,
almost? Are they being so careerist to the detriment of the thing they're in charge of?
I think so. I mean, if you go to Club Wembley, as grand as it is, and you see Wembley Stadium and all, that's their prerogative, isn't it?
Well, see, that's how it seems.
For me, their priorities are all wrong as far as they hire managers with a brief of, we want to hire a manager that wins us a tournament. But for me, their job should be, you put everything in place at a lower level,
of course,
to make things ready for that to happen.
Yeah.
And then you've presumably, after you've done that and put the foundations in place, you get the personnel, i.e. the players, through. It may take a while, but you get the players through. Then all you've got to do is hire a competent manager. I mean, the manager is someone who...
That's what the Dutch have done.
Yeah,
but that's what the Germans have done.
But the manager will make a difference. Yeah. He'll go a little bit extra. You look at the managers who are doing well. I mean... Del Bosco speaks for himself, but managers like Van Marwijk.
Exactly, Van Marwijk and Yogi Love, you look at their CVs.
Yes.
Nothing.
But they've got amazing players to work with, and that's the priority. And that's what England should set out to do, isn't it? They've got it the wrong way around. But the biggest, most depressing thing about the whole Capello leaving is just when you see all the jingoistic little England has come out of work in the press and the public.
It's like, Rio Ferdinand saying, we need an English manager. Oh, piss off, Rio. Mm. You can barely speak English.
Yeah. Paul Gascoigne, Paul Gascoigne on Sky Sports News, he said, I'm not joking,
I'll
have Venables in there.
Oh yeah,
you said that Venables.
It's not the
there.
Worst shot I've heard.
And that's the problem.
Do you know what? Right, genuinely, in the top five of English candidates,
I'd have Oddle.
You'd have.
To be fair,
well, I'm coming to that. But you would have Keegan in there. You'd have Keegan. You'd probably have McLaren. I don't know, Jim.
Keegan in the top five.
McLaren was sacked at Nottingham Forest. You know that.
Yeah, I know. But this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, this is.
The coaches aren't there.
I'd have a Hoddle and Wilkins dream team.
My word.
As you know I would.
My word.
Diamond lights.
There seems to have been a sort of backlash against Capello as well. He did have a superb record for England.
Best, in terms of win percentage, the best record ever.
True, and that, you can't argue with that, but it was a poor showing at the World Cup. There's no getting
was,
away
look
from
look
that.
Look how different the England teams are now. They're so different from that squad. So many different players have been brought through and used.
The only thing I'd lend by way of a sort of counter argument to how bad they were in the World Cup is, if you take that core group of players and you say they've had every sort of primary type of England manager you can have. So they had Ericsson, who was the thinker, then they had McLaren, who
your
was
mate.
The pal, and they had Capello, who was the disciplinarian.
If you put it like that.
And they failed every sort of every time. Yeah. So, of course, the manager picks a team and he makes a difference here and there. And
but has Harry had a go?
Well, I think Harry would be good. That's the thing.
I think Harry would be good. I mean, he is the obvious candidate. He's, you know, the thing holding him back before, I think a lot of people said, oh, has he really been at a big enough club? He's worked wonders at Tottenham. He's taken them into the Champions League. Clearly, players play for Redknapp, you know, and in a way that they, you know, clearly they weren't for Capello.
But they haven't done for a long time.
Short
service,
he's very sold.
Yeah,
he was very sold on the whole sort of like golden age of
he was.
You know, he was, you know, he tries to sound David Beckham every year. He tries, you know. I do not.
Well, he's already talking up Scholes, isn't he?
Well, exactly.
To be fair, actually, I think Scholes.
And he hasn't got
the
job.
To be fair, I think Scholes is actually not a bad
job. To fight for his 5-year massive contract, I'd say do the Euros and then we'll see if you get the next 2 years.
I think Redknapp probably should get the job. But I think, as Luke said, with your German and your Dutch situation, put Redknapp in. He's a bit of a short termist at the moment, because and that's maybe what we need, because this is what we've got. But then put the things in place in grassroots, so after, you know, in 5-6, well, it'll take more than 5 years, but then you can, start
the template is Germany after Euro 2000, which has taken sort of 10, 11, 12 years. That's the template. But whether the FA will be as long sighted as that, you don't know. You suspect they won't be. But the other thing is, when I say Redknapp will be good, I dislike the man, but I think he would be good, but I don't think he'll win anything, purely because they haven't got the players.
Well, I think, you know, the best England will be hoping for will be a good showing, but at the same time, he's got like 4 months to work with those players. It's not long enough, and I mean, that's if he leaves Tottenham now, and there's no real suggestion he'll do that. Most people are probably imagining that he'll see out the season and then then either leave or do it as a caretaker bit for a thing. I mean,
it's Pierce for the first game, isn't it? That's already now.
Well, how much can we expect of whoever comes in? I mean, there's talk of Hiddink as well, which I'm sure we'd all be pleased with if it weren't Redknapp as well. But I mean, it's a tough one. It almost makes you think, oh, Fabio, come on.
Exactly. He's going to mess things up, really. But you can't see Redknapp doing the caretaker role. The only way Redknapp, the earliest he would get involved would be for the tournament. But it's a lot big ask. It's especially for a guy, you know, 64-year-old guy or however, something like that. You know, to do a full season with Spurs, which would take a lot out of anybody, and then to go into the Euros.
Well, there's court cases as well, which has been mostly quite stressful.
Exactly. You know, people think, oh, yeah, good old Harry, he'll be fine. And I do think, you know, that rightly or wrongly, the players would respond. Having had Capello come in, a bit of a disciplinarian, and they are pampered, these players, so they don't like it. He doesn't speak English brilliantly, and, you know, apparently he has got a good sense of humour, Capello, but maybe he doesn't show it to the players. If Harry Redknapp comes in, he's a little bit more pally, a little bit more this, they would respond to that. Rightly or wrongly, though, I think they would.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But I think they need to start thinking about real short term, possibly the next couple of games after Pierce takes charge of the Dutch game and then the Euros, and someone like Hiddink might be the man to do that.
Darren Benson, I'm going, oh, fuck.
Yes, indeed, yeah.
Just getting my feet under the table, I was.
Yeah. Sandra's getting in above him.
Yeah. He'll turn up to the Holland game, about to bet his stuff off the peg, and Sandra will be there. Putting her gear on.
Hello, Darren.
But I think the FA should go for Redknapp, because everyone's going on, it's got to be Redknapp, got to be Redknapp, fine.
Give him what they want.
Yeah, and if it fails, nobody can moan, although they will, of course.
I'd rather it just get, you know, just get Redknapp out of their heads.
Yeah. Like sort of go, maybe it's not.
Just, just pull out of this one. Pull out of the Euros. Just wait to the World Cup.
I genuinely think, I'm a big fan of Capello, and when we were doing the show when he was hired, and when he first stated his interest for the job, I said, go and get him, because he'd be brilliant. I'm firmly of the belief that, you know, If Capello can't do it,
Big Sam, really, Big Sam,
then there's only one man left.
who would you like to see? Seriously, what would you like to see? What situation would you like to see? Redknapp take charge of the Euros, or someone short term like Hiddink?
I think Hiddink is the standout candidate if he wants the job and he likes to stick around for a while. But that's not going to solve the problems that the FA and the English football in general has. I mean, we talked about this at the back end of the World Cup in 2010. The amount of coaches we've got. We've got about 10% of the coaches that Germany and Spain have. You know, it's not. We don't do things right. We don't do things in the right way. So just hiring a brilliant coach isn't going to work. No. Because Capello was and still is a brilliant coach, and that didn't work. And there are different reasons for that, but the overall reason is we don't bring the players for him, we don't bring the coaches
bring
for him.
Bring in a lion, a fourth lion.
Yeah,
we need a fourth line. But anyway, going back to the Premier League, Harry's Spurs did put in a magnificent display.
Well, if that was a job interview, then he's passed it. Because that first half hour was the best I've seen a team play this season.
Yeah. Spurs were magnificent.
What the heck? Why does he save that for us?
A haul of assists.
Yeah, Saha. Everton fans would be like, oh, really?
Yeah, they get Pienaar in compensation.
I rate Saha. You know, he's been really unlucky with his injuries and stuff, but you know, he's always been
ex Newcastle. So
yeah,
come back to haunt us about 20 years later. Yeah.
But he's just got sort of dynamism to his play that I like. I think, you know, maybe just didn't seem to quite work at Everton. You know, his scoring record wasn't
he was
as
quite
good
stop
as it's
start,
been
wasn't
for
he?
Other yeah for other teams, but it's a smart move from Redknapp. Again, it shows his short termism. But
I just think there's something about Saha for me, certainly later on in his career. He's had injuries, but also I'm not sure he properly relishes being a real front line number one striker like he was at Everton. There's a lot of pressure on him to score goals. Yeah. Everton don't traditionally have that many strikers. I think he'll slot in better at Spurs when there's not as much pressure on him. He won't play every game. But when he's called upon, he's an excellent finisher. I mean, we've seen that at all the clubs he's
been
at.
Well, there's a lot of goals in that Spurs side from all different angles.
They were so good. They were excellent.
But Saha's first goal, where Adebayor, beautiful cross in, the technique on that was delicious.
Get high enough and
you just need to guide that in. If you try and hit it in, that's over the bar.
Well, you better
just guide it in, and he got it spot on.
Well, Arsenal fans, you better be hoping he's not on that sort of form, Adebayor, against Arsenal.
Yeah,
he'll
definitely
score.
I mean, they're in absolutely scintillating form. They're the best. They're playing the best football in the league, right? So good to watch.
That half hour, the first half hour, was incredible.
Like, we did not have it would 3-0 down after like a few minutes, and I was like, oh, this could end up 10, you know. It was just really, and it was just like Guthrie had no hold on the midfield just because we didn't have enough of the ball. Aubameyang was meant to sort of do a little bit more defending than he actually did, which meant that Simpson was just overloaded on the on our right there left, and it was just, oh man,
you don't want to be overloaded when you've got Gareth Bale and the likes.
You don't want to be overloaded when you've got Danny Simpson on your team.
That midfield, you know, at Spurs is irresistible, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you find yourself two or three down after 20 minutes, and you know, what can you do?
You do wonder what will happen with them if Redknapp goes, because whatever happens, they'll still be in a decent position, because it's rarely spoken about, but Spurs are backed to the hilt. The company that owns them are worth about, it's like knocking 3 billion.
Yeah.
That's why they're always signing players. You just kind of wonder where the money comes from, but it's that, and just, you know, I think if they can get in the Champions League, stay in there, which with this team
they'll get Champions
probably
League,
even yeah, but I mean they probably wouldn't even have to sign anyone to get in the Champions League again next season, the way they're playing. Like, they could actually really be building something here.
One thing I would say by way of a consolation to Newcastle is that they did the right thing. I mean, they carried on working, they tried to sort of limit it as much as they could, because we've seen what happened with Arsenal against United and with United against City. If you push on and get sort of snobby about it and say, well, we don't want to get beaten here, you leave yourself open.
Yeah.
And that's what United did against City and got hit for 6, and Arsenal did that against United and got hit for 8. So
somebody, you know, I know they beat Liverpool 4-0, didn't they, Spurs, and earlier in the season, didn't they?
And Liverpool had a man sent off, didn't they?
Yeah. Mm. But it's just, somebody was going to get a high in White Hart Lane.
It's just another incredible scoreline. In this brilliant season, having, you know,
it's been an excellent
season. All the sides in the top sort of 7-8 spots have just been giving each other hidings.
Yeah. That's right. And another standout result down the other end was Wolves 1, West Brom 5. Mm. Yeah, it was a derby.
Yeah,
a great win for West Brom, you know, they needed the points, not as much as Wolves, of course. But poor old Mick McCarthy's been
one of the good guys. I really think
that is a very bad decision.
Well, I mean, West Brom were excellent the first half. We 1-0 at half time.
Was it
1-0? West Brom should have been loads up, and Hennessy had an excellent first half.
Yeah,
he had a howler though, didn't he, as well? Yeah, poor guy, really feel for him.
But the biggest problem they had was they tired quite badly. But I mean, it's funny, isn't it? I know you say when you talk about, oh, it's a bad decision to sack a manager, for me that's only 50% of it. The other 50% is who they get in. So if they get someone excellent in afterwards,
but what are the chances of them getting
not very high? No, I agree with you. Mick McCarthy's won less than 20% of his games as a manager in the Premier League.
Mm.
That's pretty
well. He's been relegated before. It was clearly on the cards. And I think, you know, a lot of people have taken issue with the way the fans sort of booed McCarthy a lot. And it's the same thing that's happening at Blackburn. Same thing that's happening at Blackburn with Steve Keane. But I think, you know, maybe part of it is this does seem to be a very recent phenomenon. A lot of people saying, oh, people never used to do that. You'd never hear people booing your team. And, you know, it's happened at Arsenal. It's happened at Chelsea. And I think it's the state now where it costs so much to go and see football, you do get that much more irate, and you do get that much angry with them, and this is where this boo boy culture has come from. It's been brought on itself by the game.
But if you look at what position they were in when McCarthy joined you, and he took them to out of how many weeks they play in the season, there's only 2 weeks that they were not at the top of the league. It was, incredible.
I mean, I would say, to a certain extent, I agree with you. He's been there for 5 years. He took him up to the Premier League and he kept him there.
Yeah. Last season,
Liverpool, Chelsea, Man United.
I think if you're going to get rid of him at the end of the season. I don't think
I don't know. Before January. Yeah.
Well, but, I'm not sure.
He's lovable.
Exactly.
He's a lovable man.
Clearly, they thought he was going to take them down. So, you know, you can't.
But it's not like they're bottom or they're a few points adrift. They're right in there with the likes of QPR and Blackburn, who have got better standout players.
I do wonder sort of why the expectation was higher than it was for them. You know, I think it does seem a bit harsh, but you know, at the same time as I just started to say, if the board have lost confidence that the manager is going to keep them up, they've just got to change them, haven't they?
Set a decision.
You can't hope to that they themselves are proved wrong. No. You know, it's not a very sort of
and it's
forward-thinking way to run a club.
At a very base level, you're never going to know what happens the other way anyway. If you don't do it, you know, you don't know what would happen if you did do it.
So you're damned if you do.
Exactly.
Owen Coyle won't get sacked by Bolton.
They can't afford
it. It's a funny one, isn't it? Because it was sort of like, it arrived with so much fanfare.
Yeah.
It's a bit embarrassing for the board now at Bolton.
They seem to completely change their philosophy. He used to play quite nice stuff, and then at Bolton they've not played very good.
Yeah.
They've had, I mean, for me, I'm not blaming their predicament solely on this, but the loss of Stuart Holden was a big one. I mean,
it was
probably their best player, I'd say, you know.
Yeah.
And they've lost Cahill, haven't they, as well, so it's been great for them.
Yeah. We've got to mention Arsenal, Jimbo.
Yeah, just for the
Thierry
moment. When I heard about that goal, because it wasn't on TV, I read it as like, oh, Henry gets a tap in to get the winner. I was like, tap in?
Yeah.
I couldn't do that. I didn't tap that in.
That's the definition of a tap in. If you can do it, it's a
tap absolutely,
in.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Okay. I'm more aghast at Arshavin having an actual input.
Yeah, what a cross between two players.
Great, wasn't it? Yeah, I must say, you know, Arshavin obviously is reacting in the right way to the criticism he's getting, which is just getting his head down.
No, it's taken him 2 seasons.
I saw a photo of him this week at training, and Wenger's dishing out instructions, and Arshavin standing about 2 feet away from all the others, yawning. I bet when the photographer took that, he went, yes.
Yeah, that's it. That's me for the next month.
Yeah.
But it was a good win for Arsenal, though.
A vital win as well. Important to get a run of wins together.
Indeed, it was.
A straight shootout between them and Chelsea, the fourth, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, which, you know, Chelsea's result is always brilliant for Arsenal. And they just... This is the worst Chelsea have been under Abramovich. I'm starting to think as well, I mean... It's like the novelty of the money is worn off at Chelsea now. You know, for a long time they seemed unbeatable. They really, really did it. In the way kind of City do a bit now, but now they're just a normal club again. They've established themselves as one of those top clubs and it's just normal. So I think they've lost that kind of sense of invincibility.
It's interesting what's coming out with the talk in the paper, I don't know how true it is, of Mourinho being in contact with the players.
Yes,
well. That might be undermining Vyas Boas.
Well, they had a training ground bust up, didn't they?
And that's one. It's one thing for Mourinho to be in contact with the players, but it's another thing for him to be in contact with the players when people seem to suspect that he's going to be out of a job in the summer.
Yes.
And him and Abramovich are on pretty cordial terms. All of a sudden, it tends to get a bit muddy and a bit murky. You wonder. It's one thing to sack Vyas Boas, but it's one thing to sack him and knowing you've got Mourinho lined up. You know, I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah.
It could happen.
Ooh, hey. Trouble at the top.
Yeah,
trouble at Mill.
Speaking of trouble at the top, let's go to the SPL. And now, if we think any of
very
the clubs,
top.
Yeah, if we think any of the other clubs in the UK are in a bit of bother, Rangers have been docked 10 points for going into administration. I mean, it's
still second,
easily second as well.
But I mean, it is incredible.
It throws the title race wide open.
If that league wasn't so piss poor, they would have been relegated like Leeds, like a season or two seasons ago.
How could you say that? I know many people have an opinion on Rangers, but you don't want to see any club, especially one in the big three in Scotland, fall into cease to exist.
You're looking at a big one. Situation, which is no good for it's even bad for Celtic.
Yeah, no, it is though. I think that Celtic and Rangers need each other. They do, but having, as I say, grown up in Scotland, the thought of Rangers going into administration is crazy.
Yeah,
I can't stress that enough. I know people south of the border, they may not, you know, just follow the SPL
like
and whatnot, but
Man United.
It really is.
To be fair though, if you can get docked that amount of points and not get relegated. It might be good for them in the long run.
Still qualify for Europe.
that money.
Well, you put it like that, Jim. You know, it's incredible.
Is this basically? I mean, I don't know.
It's an unpaid tax bill.
Yeah, but is this all down to them massively overspending in the 90s and stuff?
Late 90s.
I remember them signing like Torre Andrea Flo for 13 million.
Well, it was odd at the time, and Sir David Murray, lest we forget, said around these times, Celtic suddenly, you know, Rangers had the 9 in a row and were obviously incredibly dominant, and then Celtic started to come up, and David Murray gave it the big one and said, well, for every £5 they're going to spend, we'll spend £10 for every and they threw money at it. And I just think they started playing fantasy football because they were so worried about Celtic, and the rivalry is so immense. And I mean, it's an unpaid tax bill.
There's talk that Craig White, who's the current owner, is in a bit of a win-win situation, because he's one of the main
Michael
creditors.
White.
No, it's Craig White.
Oh, is it Craig White?
Yeah, he's one of the main creditors, so they do go in administration.
Yeah.
And he stands to benefit either way. Because basically, he's just been ignoring tax, hasn't he?
Yeah, well...
Didn't they think they'd found a loophole? And they just hadn't.
Do you know what, Jim? I think it was probably something like
that's outrageous, and that's true.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I say, to blame White
is, I don't think he's done any favour since he's been there, but he hasn't
clearly
been very long.
It's a culmination of things, isn't it? This is happening over sort of like, what,
but
like,
Murray,
you know, a
but
period
Murray,
of like 15, 20 years by the sounds of it.
Murray was such a safe pair of hands in charge of that club. I mean, you know, he's been knighted. He was, you know, absolutely, he was the big man in for Rangers and Scottish football and all the rest of it. Everyone, oh, Rangers are such a safe pair of hands, and for this to happen, especially a lot of it to happen under his watch, is incredible.
I don't like to see any club be in that position, having been supporting a club who's also in that position, so, you know, hopefully they can come out the other side and get it sorted.
So, I mean, what does it mean for Scottish football if this does happen? I mean, I can't see Rangers just ceasing to exist, you know.
But, well, maybe the Gorgie boys, second place.
Yeah.
Back into Europe where they belong.
Every club for you,
next season. Yeah. Well, good luck to Rangers, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely,
course,
yeah.
I don't want to see that. Just before we leave the shores of the United Kingdom, another manager we've got to mention is Lee Clark, who's been sacked by Huddersfield.
The whole world's going, what?
Isn't it? It's a strange one. I mean, has he been sacked? Is this a...
Apparently has been sacked. They're in the playoffs.
You can't quit, you're sacked.
It seems to be everyone outside of Huddersfield Town Football Club thinks that it's mental, but a lot of the supporters seem to.
What's the sketch with that?
It seems to me that he did spend a lot of money, and for me, I'm like, I love Lee Clark, I love Derek Fazakerley, I love Terry McDermott, but he has spent a lot of money. He's sort of obsessed with like that Prozone thing, and he spent loads of money. He's one of the few League One clubs that have that, and he's obsessed with figures and facts and stuff, which, you know, when you hear him talk, is surprising, because it doesn't sound like he can add anything. But he's one of these sort of Fat Sam sort of character.
You meant a snake.
But he's but they're still not out of League One, and they spent a lot of money.
Might be another Simon Grayson / Dave Jones sort of situation, where they've done a very good job, but they sort of almost feel like they could take them as far as they can.
Exactly. Maybe just think a new manager might give them that sort of
impetus. Yeah. Mm. The fact that
he's broken a record.
He's lost three league games in 55. It's a great record.
But if you're talking about McCarthy's 20% or whatever.
The other angle to this was possibly that he's been making eyes at other clubs, or he's been flirting with the attention of Leeds United, or and the manager and the chairman didn't like it very much. But the reports coming out of Huddersfield are saying that he was sacked with a 2-minute phone call. He's been there years.
Yeah, but I think if you suspected that your man was wanting to go and work for Ken Bates rather than you.
Yeah. But there's talk that he's going to sue them for unfair dismissal, which he'll surely win. You know, well, we sacked you so you couldn't quit, huh?
But if you knew he was going to go to another club, why sack him before, you know, because the other club would have to pay you compensation. It seems very bizarre.
We'll have to wait and see how
that... Time to record this news just out, so I'm sure it'll be...
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see how that pans out. Let's leave the UK. We're not going too far to Holland. Yet more disarray, ladies and gentlemen. This time at Ajax. And now, of course, we spoke before on the show that Louis van Gaal was appointed as a CEO of the board, and this was behind Johan Cruyff's back. The two famously don't get along. Cruyff took it to court, backed by Bergkamp, Stam, De Boer, Jonk, the whole load of youth coaches.
Dutch
at
best of.
Yeah, pretty much a wonderful five-a-side team. And
actually, national team should be called best ofs, I think.
Yeah that'd be good. There. The best of Holland.
Yeah. Imagine that.
Yeah, big clout.
Holland's greatest hits.
But the England team would just be like singles, wouldn't it?
Yeah. B-sides of rarities.
It would be more European than that. It'd be like Dutch special.
Yeah. Real. So Cruyff went legal on them, saying that this cannot happen. And he won! Yeah. Cruyff's actually won. The one man has beaten the four. He is, yeah.
The judge was about to make a decision, and Cruyff just pulled out a ball to the Cruyff turn. Like that.
Think about this.
He walked in with 14 on the back of his blazer. Incredible. So the five members of the Ajax board, including Cruyff, since the decision, have all stepped down as well.
Win-win-win-win-win.
It's absolutely baffling.
It's almost like they care more about their own personal pride than the future of the club. Who'd have thought that?
I love that even though this mentality seems to have gone out of the current Dutch national team, the old one are still doing it.
Yeah. It runs through the fabric of their society. I also love, in amongst all this though, there's a Zlatan quote which is relevant. How that has happened, I don't know. But Zlatan Ibrahimovic, for whatever reason, was asked about Van Gaal, and he said, "Van Gaal is a dictator without any sense of humour. One day he told me I had to think more about the team, whereas Van Basten had told me the opposite. I said to Van Gaal, who must I listen to? To Louis Van Gaal or to a legend? I don't think he liked that."
I don't think he does.
Yeah. No. I don't think anyone would like that because that's backchat. Yeah.
In other news, though, Van Basten has taken up the reins at Heerenveen, who are currently third in the Dutch top flight. Ajax are sixth and playing Manchester United.
Didn't Van Basten
in the Europa League?
Didn't Ajax miss out on the Champions League when Van Basten was in charge? I mean, that is some achievement.
Well, to say that, but it's kind of not really like that anymore in Holland, is it? It's just
kind of. I suppose not. Because they have a big size of four.
Yeah. That's right. Now it's time to leave Europe and go to Africa.
Hey.
Where Zambia have won the African Cup of Nations, ladies and gentlemen.
It was just a nice end to the weekend of shit. Yes, it really was.
We've got there. We've got there, people. We're there. We've passed all
it's
the rubbish.
Lovely.
And we've got to Africa.
The joy is back in football.
Sometimes it had to be such a right.
Yes. Yeah. It's just incredible. They beat Ivory Coast 8-7 on penalties. Kano Touré and Jovinho missing the pens. But
Drogba missed a penalty in the game, didn't he?
He did, yeah. Again, the
terrible penalty from him.
Drogba's
as well.
Got a real...
in the penalty spot as well, didn't he? Classy.
The Zambia keeper, Kennedy Mwine, I think his name is.
He was
bloody
brilliant.
Loved it. Drogba, did you see him running up to him?
Yeah, he did the first thing.
Yeah. And then he went to like slap him like to give him high five as if to say, nice one for that. And Drogba was like, I didn't mean it.
I was speaking to someone about that and they said it looked to him like, in fairness, it was really sort of instinctive. Like he was so pleased.
Yeah.
He completely forgot where he was. You know, I don't think he meant to, because he was, I'll tell you what, he's a really good keeper.
He bossed the 18 yard.
Oh yeah.
He was everywhere, taking off everyone's heads and with Drogba floating around.
And let's not forget he had a great game in the semi-final against Ghana.
He's never played in Europe. He's played for the Freetown All-Stars, I think.
Well, only one or two of them play in Europe. Their goal scorer, Mayuka, who scored, I think, three in the tournament, he plays for Young Boys in Switzerland, which is the highest level any of them play. Mm. And I absolutely love this as well. You know, European clubs famously don't like... Well, they're a bit grumpy with African players going off to the tournament to play. Whereas Young Boys have taken a different stance. They've said, yeah, have another week to celebrate, big lad. They've just said, yeah, go on.
It's a transfer listing.
One of the Zambian players did the sort of the face thing as well.
The Kalu.
The Kalu thing.
The John Cena.
In the shootout. It was strange. But yeah, it was just gutted for Drogba. But at the same time, he does... It's next year, isn't it, again?
It is
for
next year.
So they've got that'll be his swan song.
It's because they're changing it to make it so it's not the same year as big European.
So it's going to be on odd years.
Drogba missed a really important one in the shootout against Egypt.
Yeah.
2006.
He did, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Good, 06, I think it was.
Good to see a goalkeeper taking a penalty as well.
It was!
And in the normal five as well, that was cool. Yeah.
Well, there was the quality of the penalties.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was
really
great.
Top draw.
Yeah.
One on the Zambia, I forget who it was, put it right in the top corner.
Yeah. What I thought he'd missed.
It's so high, yeah. Exactly.
And what was you know, fitting before the game. There's a lot of talk as we did the profile with Kalusha and the Zambian Golden Generation. Of course, the plane crash in 93 off the coast of Gabon, and it was nice to see them go to the coastline, obviously quite near where it was. And Hervé Renard.
Well, Hervé Renard seemed to have really tapped into that mentality.
He did.
And used it to their advantage. It was a very shrewd move.
Well, Kalusha, the head of the Zambian FA, got him back in for the job as manager, because he left and he went to Angola, and he came back and he apologised and he said, you know, I'm back now.
Would you have him at England?
Big time.
Would you?
Of course I would.
He dresses well.
He does.
Do you know what? There's a little thing about his watch. Jonathan Wilson wrote in The Guardian about this, that they've never lost a game, Zambia, when Renard has worn white at an African Cup of Nations game. And he packed three shirts, apparently.
But he only wore one.
He wore one for the group stages, one for the knockout stages, and one for the final.
Okay.
He had it all planned. He said he knew they were going to get to the final.
Did you like him carrying that guy on?
Oh, it was such a shame for Joseph Musonda. After 11 minutes, I think he's 34. So maybe the chances of another African, such a big game, are quite slim.
Well, it's beautiful. He's like Patrick Swayze carrying him over.
He really was.
Yeah. Because he went off after sort of 11, 12 minutes, and he was crying when he came off. And it was a good tackle as well.
Yeah. It's just one of those things.
It was such a shame. But yeah, because obviously they won the shootout, and they all ran over to celebrate. And they forgot about him. You know, he was just left up there. So Renard went over and carried him over.
Jovinho didn't fancy his pen, did he?
It's almost like he took too many touches. You know, like sort of...
Yeah, no.
You should have done the William Gallas, take your boots off. I didn't realise, sorry. Boots are off now.
Yeah. But what, it was a
pulsating 0-0.
We didn't want to take one. He looked like, to me, Jovino bottled the first five penalties, yeah, and then it went on for so long, he had to take one. So he was emotionally all over the
he
place.
He looked so not into it. Yeah. He had to have a pep talk beforehand and stuff. Oh,
Touré's was terrible as well.
The striker?
The run-up. The run-up almost made him just gave away what he was going to do. Yeah. You know, it was strange, but his body language was proper. Like, I'm just going to hit this hard down the middle. Oh,
yeah. But it was a decent game though, as well.
It was one of the most emotional, tense, dramatic nights of football I can remember for a very long time. Because especially when on the face of it, none of us have got a really vested interest in it. So if you take England games out of the equation and not at that level, I can't think of a game I was more emotionally invested in. It was really, really good to watch.
Yeah, and we must mention Mali finishing third, beating Ghana.
Ghana
for
a shocker there. Fourth place, they'll be disappointed with that.
Well, I mean, that Ivory Coast especially, I mean, they've come so close and they haven't won it for such a long time.
But as I say, it being next year, it means it gives pretty much all of those players another shot.
But when they get into the tournament, you don't have Nigeria, you don't have South Africa,
Cameroon,
Egypt, who have been the Achilles heel.
Yeah.
What a chance it was, and it's gone begging again.
You see that first 11? Got a brilliant team. One of the best teams in the world.
Yeah,
really.
As I stress, Zambia, they're probably their best player who plays at the highest level, plays for Young Boys in Switzerland.
Right though for the penalty for the
He almost looked like he genuinely couldn't believe it when he missed it. Like, he didn't quite know where he was. Like, it was a dream or something. He's like, no, I'll do that again, right?
It didn't look like it was a bobble in the slightest. It didn't look like it was a problem with the penalty.
Ivory Coast's kits are very intimidating. They're so figure.
Players
are so ripped.
That's right.
They're like superheroes.
Oh, no.
Look at one of those kids' Batman costumes you see him wear with the padded muscle.
Dear, oh dear.
Well, how do we know they're not?
That's a fair point, actually.
That is. That's the African Cup of Nations roundup for another year. In the meantime, Luke has made his way over to Diego Corner. Luke, can you hear me?
I can, here I am.
Good. What have you got for us?
A couple of bits and pieces. Diego's had his say about the Fabio Capello / England news. He said, as far as the situation with Capello is concerned, what we heard initially was about John Terry. This is what the English FA are saying. It's clear the FA were looking to fire him. And then he went on to say...
I love it, he gives his opinion.
He just said, by the way, I absolutely don't want the England job.
We'd have him. Could you imagine the reaction?
No,
the appointment to take us into the Euros.
There's nothing on heaven and earth that could make that situation happen.
It's like the worst attempt at reverse psychology ever. He only just stopped short of going, anyone who does say I want it is a liar. I definitely don't.
Although if they offer us the Falklands back, maybe I'll think about it.
Yeah, it's not the time for an Argentinian defeat.
The 80s are back, aren't they? What's going on?
And go on loan somewhere.
There you go.
And he also had a little to say about the Carlos Tevez saga as well. Predictably, he's on the side of Carlos Tevez. He says, I know Mancini well, too well. That's why I believe Carlito in all of this. Mancini was a spoilt brat in Sampdoria and Inter, and he still is with City. Every person has their methods as a coach, but you need to have some tact.
Indeed you do.
He said from inside his glass house.
Yeah.
He also went on to
say
something.
He should give the dog its face back to use his own parlance.
Don't let the tortoise get away, Diego. He's also a little bit incredulous that he's been frozen out of the football scene in Argentina after his performance as manager. He said, every single door has been slammed in my face. It's unbelievable. I am an exiled Argentine, but I want everyone to know that I'm still Argentine all the way down to my underpants.
Just your clothes, then.
Obviously.
Not my body.
Inside the underpants.
Is that just he's wearing an Argentina kit?
Pair of pants, yeah.
I love it. He's exiled.
We've seen what's in his underpants.
We have.
It's shockingly unimpressive.
He's
just come off the pitch.
Yeah, fair enough.
And it's, you know...
It
must have been cold. It must have been a cold night in Bolton on a Tuesday. Why would he be playing there? I don't know. Before we go to Going for Glory, there's a little story coming out of Brazil. Brazil, and then we talked about Adriano a number of times, the emperor, with his various demons off the pitch. Well, here's another one. Brazilian club Corinthians have been keeping the big forward detained inside the team's hotel. He's become quite the size, so they're trying
to hire thugs to do that.
Yeah. Whoever
he's got room service.
He's about 4 years younger than when Ronaldo was really fat.
Yeah,
he's bigger.
Yeah,
he's Adriano's what, 29, 30?
29.
He's nearly 10 years younger than Ryan Giggs.
Looks like he's eating Ryan Giggs. Yeah.
Well, anyway, they're trying to make him lose weight, force him to lose weight. He'll only eat what doctors give him. And he's been missing training.
Is Dr. Ryan McDonald's?
Yeah, must be. He's been missing training every now and then, so we'll have to train three times a day. But the fitness trainer at the club said, you know, in the hotel we have more control over him. He knows we're trying to do the best for him, and all of us are dedicated, but it depends on him. And it's quite sad, actually.
Well, he's such a troubled man. It's horrible to see this keep recurring, this sort of problem.
In Brazil, there's a big tradition of having a concentración, which is where they put the if there's an away game, the players get cooped up in a hotel a day or two before. Mm. So it's a little bit more sort of local than that. I think it's sort of quite traditional.
Yeah, it's not like he's been held prisoner.
No.
But they sort of said that he needs to not eat so much crap because exercise alone will not get rid of. And I'm looking at him going,
yeah, you're a fitness trainer.
He can't be working that very hard.
Yeah, the fitness trainer's got a cushy number there. Yeah.
I mean, really?
Has he not got the hardest job in the world?
Yeah, but he's saying that
he needs to diet before he can, yeah. There's muscle under there, honest.
Yeah. Like one of those obese people, the only exercise they can do is like lifting an arm up and down.
Yeah, and it knackers them.
Yeah.
Big bones, eh? Right, now it's time for Going for Glold.
Going for Glold. Glold. It is time for Going for Glold, Marcus. And this week, I've only got 5 clues, so you better get your heads on.
You are a hard taskmaster,
Donaldson. It's been an action-packed show.
He's come to this one, Going for Glold, that I don't care if I win. I was so happy that one of us won last week.
Just then, it was a super shout. You
it
got
was,
it.
Was.
Nowhere. I'm back in the race. I was having a stinker before that.
Right, Pete.
I'll say there's only 5 clues. The first one is this. Mm. I was and continue to be Dutch.
Cheers, Pete.
It's all right, Jim.
Stop. Pierre van Hooijdonk.
No.
Stop. No.
Just think of a Dutchman.
Mark Overmars.
Think of a Dutchman.
Stop. Ruud van Nistelrooy.
No.
It's going to be a weird... Stop. Glenn Helder.
You can't have two guesses on the same game.
In my second match for my English club, my first act was to slide tackle Gary Neville and get sent off.
Ooh. Oh, good clue.
Oh.
Stop. Johnny Heitinger?
No. Three clues left, gentlemen. I signed for my 6th club for £1 million in 1995, despite my manager having never seen me play.
Ooh.
Okay.
That manager...
Stop.
What?
Brian Penis.
I had to say it.
He's not Dutch.
I thought he was Dutch.
I thought he was French.
I think he is Dutch, isn't he?
Oh, is he? Okay.
Have I gone mad?
Yeah,
worth a check, eh?
That manager, who would never see me play but still sign me for £1 million, was Harry Redknapp.
Stop. Marco Boogers.
Yeah! Yeah! Well done.
Due to a misheard interview, I was once accused of living in a caravan.
Yeah.
You sure it wasn't Brian Penis? Yeah. I wanted to say it again.
Yes.
Alright, okay.
Pete's Penis is called Brian.
Well done, pal.
Thank you, Mary. That's 2 on the hat trick.
Well done, mate. Oh! Right in the corner. You moved your shoulder.
Quickly, an email.
Thank you for your
email,
lady.
An email. Pedro, do you want to do this one?
All right, then.
It is...
Me and now. This is from Jamie Isles, or Ailes, from London.
Ah.
Ramblers, in an innovative attempt to raise money, Bath City are offering the chance to rename their stadium for the 2012-13 season. It is £50 a ticket, and whoever wins the draw will get naming rights for the season. Whilst it is a long way from its spiritual home in the northeast, you could have an official Cave of Funk for just £50. Shazam, he says.
Let it happen.
Where's the website? Well, there's a website, isn't there, where you can go, which is bathcityfc.com/name the stadium. So, yeah, I mean, it'd be nice if the Cave of Funk did get a couple of entries.
Yeah.
I think it should just be called The Bath.
I'm well up for that.
The Bath in the Bath.
Yeah.
Any flush listeners, get on that. Right?
You can't flush a bath.
No, it was genuinely wasn't even a pun.
Yeah, I don't know why Luke laughed.
Yeah, nice plug, though.
There it is. I'm trying to work it in better.
It's nice to have mateys.
That's right.
To help out.
Yeah, you are off the chain.
No.
Okay, it's a toilet-based one.
We've finished it now. It's over.
You're at the end of the rope on the sword.
Just make sure that the club don't get accused of tapping up.
You're having a bubble bath.
I think the fans will be a bit...
reset it now.
Yeah. I think the fans will be a bit hot and cold about it. I had to say one.
Can I?
Yes, please. Save us.
Got another email.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, customer.
Strange start.
Greetings to you. Well, I would like to know whether you sell football machines. Let me know the models, sizes and prices of them. Also, I would like to know whether you accept credit card payment. Hope to hear back from you soon. Best regards, Jim Harrison.
Jim Harrison.
Good old Jim Harrison.
Jim Harrison.
Now, to explain this a little bit, we get quite a lot of spam into the Football Ramble email account.
That's not one of them.
That's possibly my favourite bit ever. Firstly, he's trying to buy things from his customers.
Hello, customer. Yeah. Can I buy something from you?
Yeah. What's a football machine? Yeah. What is a football machine? That bit's in bold as well and capitalised.
If someone did sell football machines, it would be you, Pete.
Yeah.
And that's what he's thinking.
I'm just a football machine.
What would a football machine do?
It'd be Lionel Messi, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah.
You are a football machine, sir. That is a confusing metaphor, but thank you.
Yeah, so you'll find our football machine in Barcelona, about 5'6".
Well, Jim Harrison can go on footballramble.com/shop.
Nice, like what you did there.
Hello, I'm Dean Windass, and this is my Hall of Fame.
That leads us to a profile. And what a profile we've got today. It's Joe Marston, the big Aussie. Well, I don't know if he was that big, but he was certainly an Aussie. And he was the first Australian to play in an FA Cup final. But let's get the most important fact out of the way. He was born on the 7th of January, 1926.
41 and a half years before the summer of love.
Good one. It's a tricky one, that.
Cheers.
Tricky one. Yeah, now, a number of Aussies have played in the top flight and play around Europe and whatnot.
Aussie Ardiles, for example. Long.
Yeah, can't complain with that one, people. But this man was one of the first, and perhaps...
One of the first Australians, or one
to play, to play in a top league in Europe. One right. of the... A trailblazer, one could perhaps call him. And certainly one of the first to do it successfully as well. Marston started his footballing career at Leith Hart Annandale in the New South Wales State League in his late teens during the 1940s.
Can't imagine the standard would be that.
When I say football career, he started playing football.
Yeah.
Then. Now, this, of course, was not his only job. To live off that, I think, would have been an incredible stretch of the imagination.
The only professional footballer in the country.
It's like when the London Underground built the first station, Baker Street, and then they didn't build another station. About 2 years. Yeah. Like, what's the point? Where's the training in the guy?
They were playing the long game.
Yeah.
He was also a lifeguard to Australia.
Yeah,
you gotta love that.
Nice.
And
is he in a soap as well?
Yeah, even to in the future, perhaps. And worked for I don't know what I mean by that, but you threw me because he worked for a local paintbrush manufacturer.
He's getting more and more Australian. It's great,
isn't he? He had an interest in British football from a young age, as one of his neighbours was from Scotland and would give him newspaper cuttings from the Scottish papers about the games happening in the UK.
An interesting British football.
Yeah. No, interest in British football.
Oh, right. I thought you had a British football with like a stovepipe hat. Hello.
Interesting British football.
What an interesting British football.
I like to think that when this Scottish guy was giving him newspaper clippings, he couldn't understand him, and just assumed he'd also written down the things he was saying. Like, oh, all right, yeah. This guy's really interesting.
He's taught that and everything.
So yeah, that's where his first into the English footballing world was. Now, his team he played for, Annandale, were one of the best in the region, and he got a call up to the Australian national team in 1947 at the age of 21. And it was against South Africa in Sydney. 40,000 people were there.
Blimey.
Which is odd to think an international football match in Australia in 1947 would draw such a crowd, but it did.
And time I spent in Australia, I mean, it's obviously recently, it's popular, but it certainly plays second fiddle to the other sports.
Well, probably fourth fiddle to rugby. Yeah.
Depending
rules
on what
cricket
sort of territory you're in and stuff. Yeah.
Now, a friend of Marston's had a few contacts in England, and he told them about the young Australian defender. And in 1949, a scout from England informed him that Preston North End were interested in offering him a trial.
Stanley Matthews involved?
Yeah. I love that. We'll offer you a trial. He's coming from Australia.
Yeah. You know. That I wouldn't take it.
You got to offer him a bit more than that, you know.
You know, there's no other way to see if he's any good, though, at the time, was there? Presumably they paid for him to do it. You would hope so, anyway.
That's true. There's a lovely story as well that it was his mum who took the call, and she went down and he was like lifeguarding on the beach, and she was like, oh, there's a team in England that are interested in it. It's quite sort of
it's taken them like 3 weeks to get there.
Yeah, crazy. Well, I think I think the club with Preston were actually quite interested in him because they offered to pay for him and his wife to fly there, I think it was, which was expensive. I mean, it was £665 for both of them. And back in those days, it was a hell of a lot of money.
Yeah, I bet he had to stop three times.
You look at the list of stops and there's about four or five in there, ranging from different continents, you know. So when they eventually arrived in Preston via plane and, of course, train, because no direct flights, even nowadays, to Preston, and they pulled into the train station and
got it. Damn it!
So we're in London. How far have we got to go? Well,
it probably took him about 24 hours to get to London and then took about 48 hours to get to London to the train. Just steal what it takes now. Yeah.
Which would have cost more than the flight.
£1,000. Yeah. But you would have got a croissant and a cup of tea.
Yeah. Oh, a little bit of politics there.
No croissants then. Yeah. No croissant.
Anyway, they pulled into Preston train station and were met by two directors from the club and about 150 fans of the club. Well, because they couldn't believe that someone was coming from all the way from Australia to play for them.
They had nothing else on.
Yeah, well, but in the sort of late 40s,
I'll say this mug.
Well, the late 40s, early 50s, it was rather unheard of, you know, for someone to visit the UK from Australia, let alone turn up and play football. His first training session with Preston would have been quite the culture shock, I would imagine. You know, weeks earlier he was lifeguarding on the beach and suddenly he was playing in Preston in the winter on a pitch which had snow round the edges.
I imagine he was guarding for his own life, knowing how football used to be played back then.
Yeah. Well, that's right, yeah. He started out playing for the reserves at fullback and broke into the first team and was converted to centre-back. The club won the old second division, and two seasons later, they were narrowly pipped to the title by Arsenal on goal difference. Oof. Very, very close indeed. But by then, he was first-choice centre-back. And he had a great rapport with the fans there, which is suggested in this story. After 3 years at Preston, him and his wife were very homesick because, you know, they hadn't returned since they'd been there. It was very far away and expensive to get back. So the fans got the money together for the Marstons to have a trip home to see the family and friends.
Oh, lovely time.
Isn't it?
It's obviously tempting to think of sort of football players as always independently wealthy, but back then
Well, you look at World Cup winners selling their medals. Yeah. You know, English World Cup winners, of course.
Like. Yeah. Around this time, Arsenal offered Preston £80,000 for him, but he was never going to go elsewhere apart from his beloved Preston North End. Between 1951 and 1955, Marston played 196 consecutive matches for Preston, which is no mean feat nowadays. But
it's like he had a break between each one.
Yeah. I don't know, dude.
People were tough back then. You've got to ask these questions.
There was no substitutions, remember? Yeah. That's 90 minutes.
Out of the 12-hour marathon on Clapham Common, and that was a killer.
Yeah.
169 games.
Well, let me tell you, in amongst this, Marston remembers losing three teeth in a game once. Another time he got a huge bruise on his leg in the shape of the outline of the ball stitching because it hit him so hard in the cold. Oof. And it was there for days. And then he also remembers how one of his injuries was dealt with during the winter. He said, when the pitches were frozen, we'd often cut ourselves on the ground. But the cold proved to be an advantage in one game because I slipped and got a bad cut, but it was so cold it didn't bleed that much. When half time came around, they poured whiskey on it to act as a disinfectant, gave him a swig just before they put the stitches in, and sent him back out for the second half.
Get out there. it's
wow.
It is wow, yeah. Isn't it?
Are you listening, Sergio Busquets?
No, he's not.
No.
That is just incredible, isn't it? 1954 was probably his proudest moment in England. He became the first Australian to play in an FA Cup final. To put that in perspective, the next Australian to play in an FA Cup final was Liverpool's Craig Johnson in 1986. 1954, and then Tim Cahill in 2004, Johnston played for in 88 as well. Yeah, for Millwall. So if you look at it like that,
way ahead of his time.
My goodness, you know. Unfortunately, Preston, after drawing 2-2, they lost the replay 3-2. And Preston had a good side then. So Tom Finney was playing for them and Tommy Docherty. And the following season, Marston was given the captaincy, taken over from Finney himself. He was also picked for the English league team to play a Scottish League 11. And at that time, those matches were huge, and having a foreigner in your lineup was completely unheard of. And then
Australia would have lost a great player because he couldn't go home for games or anything like
that. Yeah, I mean, he played one or two when he was in England, but he did get 37 international caps, which was quite something, as you say, because he was away for that time. But he moved back to his beloved Australia after five great years at Preston in 1955, and he continued to play in Australia for various clubs and went into management, becoming Australia's first homegrown manager as well of the national side. Made a member of the British Empire in 1980 for his services to football. And in Australia, the Joe Marston Medal was created, which is the award given to the man of the match in the now A-League grand final each season, named after him. which is some accolade, really.
Yeah, excellent.
Only one foreigner to have won that award. Dwight York in 2005, 2006.
Yeah. He's still alive?
He is still alive. He's 86.
Dwight York? He's saw him on the telly at the weekend.
I just see him wearing a seatbelt.
He pundits like he's dead, but he is still alive.
He is great, is he? Yeah. But Marston, Preston North End legend, and about 4 years ago, when he was 82, he gave an interview and he picked out a stand-up moment of his career, and he said, "I'm 82 now, but I can still picture there standing in the middle of the field at Preston North End when it was told that I was going to be leaving, and the crowd was singing Waltzing Matilda and For He's a Jolly Good Fellow. That emphasised my strong feelings for Preston, not only the team but also the town and the people as well."
Hey.
Marvellous stuff.
Top man.
Here comes Joe Marston, ladies and gentlemen. Wounds and all.
First Australian in?
I think he is.
I think he is, yeah.
I think he is.
To make a new category on the site, aren't they?
We've got to make a new flag for his badge. Yeah.
He's very welcome, though.
Very Absolutely. Welcome, indeed. There it is, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you liked the show. If you'd like to get in touch with us, the email address is show@thefootballramble.com and the website is thefootballramble.com, isn't it, Jim?
It is, and there's some stuff on it as well. And this week in our website's corner of Internet City, Liam Twimmy asks if Mike Ashley finally deserves some praise. James Appel looks at a new report condemning the treatment of players in Eastern Europe and how this makes them sort of susceptible to match fixing. And Andy Brassel returns with a retro ramble looking at Porto's clash with Bayern Munich in the 1987 European Cup final. There's plenty more besides that, including live fantasy football from Pick Live, the Hall of Fame, the Shop, and all kinds of fun on the forum. Go there now. Also, if you find yourself with a problem, football related or otherwise, that you just can't seem to shake, why not let me try and sort it out, eh? Email james@thefootballrealm.com with your woes and I'll do my best to fix them via the blog. So
he's on
yes.
new agony, uncle.
Yes.
On the shop
problems you've got, you weirdos.
Yeah, I'm sure there's many. On the shop front, we've got a new Harry Redknapp t-shirt.
Yep.
And it's best worn when you're being talked to through a car window. And we've got a Glow t-shirt as well, so get on the shop, footballrealm.com/shop.
Get on it. That's it from us, isn't it? Say goodbye, Jim.
Goodbye.
Say goodbye, Pete.
Goodbye.
And goodbye, Luke.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. Au revoir, Bipples.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.